I know. Well, I just had to restart my computer. So
you
know.
Bring on that Peabody Award winning
oh, Peabody. God.
Peabody. It's been a week. Yeah, just that's what they pay me for, to ask you if you did your ramp and turn it back on again.
Hello and welcome to the 55.1 podcast. My name is Wes Burdine. I am joined by Mark Fangmeier and Rodrigo Sanchez Chavarria. Corey Schreppel is doing espionage for the New York Times, and so can't join us tonight, but he did join us just to fix Mark's microphone, which was doing Transformer voice for us. We almost did an entire Decepticon episode, but you're here. Mark, your microphone works.
It works. I'm here. I mean, I was really hoping to finally embrace my inner Daft Punk.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, I cannot tonight. So yeah. I'm back to just being me, which is, you know, a little bit of a letdown, but it's okay.
Yeah, we got Corey to come on to tell you to restart your computer. So
yeah, it turns out that works.
Peabody award winning restarting
tech support.
Rodrigo, it's Issa Watch's birthday today. Did she have a great 19th birthday?
Yeah, I mean, she didn't wake up till like, yeah, we didn't get out of this house till like 1.
Good for her.
So
congratulations.
But I had banchan for the first time.
Did you take off work for her birthday?
That's what we always do.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
You don't
all
do that?
The kids? All the kids are no. Just your favorite.
The kids go to school.
No, just all the kids.
And I go to work. I don't.
What's the point of having time off if you don't use it?
I don't have time off.
Oh, well, that's you though. Sorry.
I get like half a day to myself a week. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Explains the gummies.
So. Yeah, that does explains. I'm double fisting with a THC drink and a this is an Urban Growler plus La Doña Cerveceria, a Mexican lager that they're doing together.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
I might have to try that one.
It's pretty good. Yeah. They brought it by as a sample for me. So anyway, this is a podcast where we talk about soccer, specifically usually Minnesota United, and with that. This podcast is brought to you by Away Games at Blackheart, because this year we partnered with Sun Country and Fulton to bring back the World Cup passports, which were a huge success for a bunch of weird sickos who called themselves the Stamp Sluts. And if you want to be a Stamp Slut yourself, you get a passport, and every away game you come to, you get it stamped. We're going to do two drawings throughout the season, one for the last away game of the season, the other one in the middle. I think it's the NYC away game. And you can win two vouchers on Sun Country, so you can go have an away game in person. So anyway, come watch those with us, including the Open Cup game tomorrow night, which is going to be weird because I have to do the first half in the main room and the second half in the back room. But that's what happens when Open Cup gets announced like 2 weeks before the game. Let's start off. We've got some quick hits, but I want to do Aurora news because big week this week. Minnesota Aurora, the sophomore year, we're back.
And hell yeah.
Wednesday night is the first game of the season. It is the home opener. It is against Rochester FC, who call themselves the Loons, which I think
So is this technically a derby match then?
Yeah, it is. It's first time we've played a Minnesota team, right?
What's the hashtag for this derby?
I think it's called the Casserole Cup or the Hot Dish Dish. I'm not sure what it is. I hope that Ravantolet work with someone who likes Rochester and they make like a gold lacquer covered hot dish casserole thing. It couldn't be called the Casserole Cup because no one calls it a casserole here. So
no, it'd be a hot dish.
I forget what it was titled, but I think I made a joke about it and then Rochester started to use that. So the Northern Lights kick off their season Wednesday, 7 p.m. If you don't have tickets already, you should be coming. The team features about 2/3 of last year's squads. The most notable players not coming back are Sarah Fuller, Morgan Turner, Cha, and Rachel Preston. Those were all starters and great contributors. But the big pickups are there's like five players who have or six who have professional or national team experience. Sophie French, who was with the Portland Thorns. Kennedy Faulkner, who was in Australia and is Canadian and is a center back. Sophie French, I think, was a defender, but likely will be on the wing. Hannah Adler, who was just with the U.S. Women's Beach national team, is, like, I think going to be a number 10. I don't know. I'm going with the best of what I know. Vienna Benka was playing professionally in Iceland and I think is a winger. And then Tiana Harris is another center back. I got to watch the first half of a scrimmage, a closed-door scrimmage the other day, and Kennedy is an amazing ball-playing center back. I think she's going to destroy humans this year. I think that it is a massive step up for the club. So I'm really excited to see what they can do. Also, did you see that Heather O'Reilly is playing in the league?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was amazing.
38 or 39-year-old Heather O'Reilly is playing for, I think, North Carolina's USLW team. I think that's who. Uh-huh. I hope we meet them in the playoffs. That'd be awesome. So they are now the U39 team, as she said. Anyway, I'm excited for the season. I know that a lot of it is like we don't know what to expect because you don't know a lot of these new players, but those five players I just mentioned, there's other players who have come in who I think are going to be impressive as well, but it's kind of hard to overlook these five. Sophie French and Hannah, Iris was giving them ideas because we went to the media day where they were filming all their like GIF celebrations, and a lot of the players are like, I don't know what to do. So Iris then was like, I've got ideas.
Is someone
like,
doing the gritty?
I don't know if anyone did that. I don't know. I'm not giving you spoilers, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to talk to Iris if that doesn't happen. So, but like, did you take part of the coaches event that you guys had?
Because I didn't.
I heard of a lot of other coaches that they actually had a good time, and I thought it was really good for you guys to be at. Except that I couldn't make it. So
yeah.
But overall, heard good things. So.
I think there was like 40 coaches who came to it. It was like a coaching clinic that our coaching staff put on at TCO, and it's a really cool idea. And I think the great thing about Nicole being our director of, is she director of soccer? She's like both the head coach and the director. We're going the full Peter Vermees with Nicole.
Or Adrian Heath.
Yeah, don't be mean. is that Nicole can start to create and implement things like that. And it's great for me. I have a way step back role with the club now, like very little, almost no day-to-day, just board level stuff. And so it's very cool for me to see this stuff. And I had no idea it was happening. You know, same thing where it's like, I don't know anything about these players. I'm learning just like you guys. I just have maybe slight more information. Anyway, I'm pumped about the game. I have nothing to do. I won't be selling merch. I'm just there to party with people and celebrate winning. So,
oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah, here
Wait,
we go.
Does that mean I can't get another volunteer shirt like the first game?
Yeah, it does mean that. Sorry.
That sucks.
Anyway,
I'm gonna wear mine.
I'm excited
on game day on Wednesday. See what happens.
I'm just pumped for this season. It's gonna be a freaking blast, and I know the bus from Blackheart is sold out for this game, but I think there's tickets for the buses for the other ones. Go to the Blackheart website on the shop. But let's go to some good, the bad, and the weird here. We're going to try to do this quickly because it's just going to be a long episode. We haven't seen you guys in 17 years. The good, Bayern lost to RB Leipzig. Well, that's not great. But that means we might have a non-Bayern winner of the Bundesliga. Dortmund can win the Bundesliga with a win over Mainz this Sunday at, shoot, I should have had this. Sorry, guys. I think it is 8:30 when they, or is it Saturday? Yeah, Sunday is EPL day. Saturday at 8:30. Blackheart will be opening at 8. It's going to be awesome. Bundesliga day. Come wear your Lederhosen. And if Dortmund win, they will win the title. Sad news for Bundesliga Zwei is that FC St. Pauli did not make the playoff. the last spot. They went on a run where I think it was 11 wins in 13 games because they lost to Hamburg and drew a game. Maybe it was 11 out of 14. Anyway, they went on an absolutely crazy run. Had they tied or beaten Hamburg, they'd still be in it. But Hamburg get that last spot in the playoffs. So FC St. Pauli got close, hopefully next year. Other big news, Ryan Reynolds FC or Wrexham qualified for League Two. So they're going up to the National League. You guys probably hadn't heard this. It's not been really under the radar news.
No one's really covered it at all.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, not even like celebrity. Yep.
And then also this weekend on Saturday, this is, again, I haven't yet done my my chalkboard at the bar yet, so you can tell. When is the championship? The championship final.
Oh, anyway. What's the name of the it's Coventry versus, is it Luton starts with an L?
Luton. Yeah.
Yes.
You're talking about Europa or?
No, this is the English Championship. It is Saturday at 10:45. We will have that after the Bundesliga. It's Coventry versus Luton Town. Coventry, our friend Steve in town, is a big lifelong Coventry fan. They have not been up to the Premiership or to the top flight in like 7 million years. Basically, since the dinosaur time. So that would be a pretty amazing. Also, Luton have a great logo with a hat on it. We need more less James Milner and more Milliner in the Premier League. The other thing is that the USL announced that their women's pro league, which is going to be called the Super League, that was going to be a second division, and now they are going to be a first division to rival the NWSL, which seems like a pretty natural decision for them. I think once you get people in there, you're saying, you know, you're going to be paying pro wages, but you're going to have a D2 stigma. Like, why not just go first division? There's not really that much of a difference, except for stadium needs. So, but that is going to be reigniting soccer wars. I think we're part three now, part four. I don't know. For those,
what was NASL? MLS.
I don't actually. I'll have to count it. No, NASL versus USL was the original soccer wars.
But then
NASL versus. Yeah, I mean it's all big one soccer wars. Yeah. It's never ended. We didn't start the fire. Anyway, it's going to be big, obviously, for many reasons. I'm not going to say anything on this podcast about it, but I think it's really fascinating, worthwhile watching how it goes. And
wait, where does Oakland Roots play? Is that
there? Oakland Soul is the women's club. They're in the W League, hopefully we get to host them in the final and beat them. But they are planning to join the USL. Same with Forward Madison and a few others. So let's go to the bad. This is the Vinicius Jr. racist abuse and fallout. Rodrigo, you give us this one.
All right. So it's no, if you've been following the Liga or any other world league in a sense, we know that racist chants against mostly just, you know, Black players and African players have been happening a lot in the Italian league. We thought that would be, you know, we referred to what was that league, the racist league, but now the Liga is decided to take the cake. Vinicius Jr. Was verbally attacked. They were chanting, doing monkey chants and calling him a monkey. They were telling him to die. And it got to the point.
The Atletico Madrid fans had a effigy of him with a noose hung from
right.
A bridge.
I mean, this is the first incident. This is a compilation of several instances in where it's happened throughout, you know, his tenure in Real Madrid. And it's always as to, he has to always show the better face. And sometimes he's gotten flack for being reactive, and you know, I agree with what he's doing, but But in their Valencia game, right, the coach for Real Madrid, Carlos Ancelotti, was talking to Vinicius about the atmosphere and if he wanted to keep on playing. And eventually he didn't want to keep on playing. And the fact that he's had to make a decision not based on soccer or soccer-related decision to sub a player is just something that, you know, he did really well in his press conference to address. He's like, you know, he's suffered abuses through all this time. The league has done barely anything. And then eventually when they were trying to sub him off, he made a gesture towards the bench of Valencia. And then apparently I think it was the goalkeeper. I don't know who it was out there that just literally started choking him. And they were trying to follow him. And then Vinicius gets the red card, so he has to really leave. It was just, you know.
Well, did he get a red card for the gesture or for?
I don't know if it was for the gesture, as confusing as it is, but he got the red card. And so, like, it was with a clash with Valencia substitute Hugo Duro, which is kind of a funny name, to be honest. But yeah. Very, it rhymes really well, too. And, you know, it's just. In a statement, literally, Vinicius said, no, this is La Liga. It's normal to be racist in La Liga now. And he put in a social media post about it, of all the instances that he's done. And I think the owner of the league, I forget that dude's name, but he's Doug. Just, yeah.
Yeah, they Doug. They suck. They basically were like, oh, and then lots of commentators in Spain being like, yes, racism is bad, but you know, he also egged them on, and it's like, fuck you, man, like, just it. I was thinking about it because I was watching a TV show, just a random fiction TV show, where this one player, never mind, I'm gonna delete this. This is not a useful anecdote.
Was it Ted Lasso?
No, did someone
use the second F word?
It wasn't a useful anecdote. It was me thinking about racism.
Well, so the La Liga president, Javier Tebas, had responded to Vinicius' criticism in a Twitter exchange in which he said, neither Spain or La Liga are racist. It is very unfair to say that at La Liga, we denounce and tackle racism with all the toughness within our powers. You know, this says, this season, racist insults have been reported 9 times. 8 of them have been for insults against Vinny. 8 of the 9. If we always identify these maniacs and file a complaint with the relevant bodies. There was just like the statement that he put out in addition saying, is like, hey, we reached out to you, Vinicius, to come talk to us and kind of help us set protocol. What do you think could help us? And then my response to that is like, his job is to come and play soccer. Mm-hmm. That's his job. That's his responsibility. Why he has no obligation to be able to meet with presidents and people who are supposed to create a safe environment, right? This is your league.
Yeah.
And do your work for you.
And like, also shows, you have to show if you want to engage someone like Vinicius and say, we want to partner with you to what can you teach us? You have to show that you're actually doing some work there and then come in and maybe be like, all right, we're doing something here and now come help us do it better. But you're not doing
right, anything. Right, exactly. But they're not. And that's the thing. It's like they want to use this as an excuse of not even doing the bare minimum in that sense, right? I mean, and that's the thing too. And the funny thing for a lot of people outside of La Liga is that Spain is becoming, La Liga is becoming known as a racist league, right? And that's bad for Spain, but in my personal reality, it's just the better truth that I, you know, that's been going on for a while, I think, in the sense that people don't really want to talk about. But it does that. Now we have two world respected leagues, or two of the biggest leagues, you know, two of the biggest leagues in the world who have a problem with racism. Yeah. And they're in their stadiums and every single bean. And I honestly don't know. And FIFA says they want to do something, but FIFA also is not doing anything at all. So,
well, I think to add to what you're saying there is they all have problems with racism, but two of them are completely overtaken by racism right now.
Yes, that is true. And that's a better statement.
And yeah, it sucks. It really is. It's just garbage. It's the reason I do not. I just refuse to watch Syria or get involved. And now with La Liga, it's like, okay, well, not interested there. Another bad Manchester City won the Premiership again. In the weird,
I mean, but also Arsenal didn't win, so that's kind of a good too.
That is a good.
And also Arsenal had the lead, and then they didn't win, which is a very good.
Yep, you're singing my song. My brother messaged me and said his 7-year-old son is looking for a Premier League team to support. So he was asking me which teams not to, and I was like, obviously none of the oil money. So like no Newcastle, no Manchester's, no Chelsea. Yeah. And then,
I mean, honestly, and wait to see who wins the match on Saturday, and then just follow that team.
He wanted to. He was
should have
like,
just told him Everton.
He likes blue. He likes animals on logos. And he wants a good team. And I was like, that's basically Brighton. I was like, they're the only one. I looked in Germany as well. I was like, Germany doesn't usually do lots of animals on logos. And so it's either Spurs or Brighton. And I was like, you can join me and Emil in the sad place where we are with Spurs, or you can be a fan of Brighton, who at least for the next couple of years are going to be good until they go full Leicester on you and go to the championship. So,
or you can, or you can join an oil-based team and sit in third place. So,
yep, absolutely. It's got to be great. Loving that oil and blood and, chopping people up. Here's the weird North Carolina FC. One of the supporters was caught on camera pouring a beer onto the media team from, what was the team? Charlotte Independence.
Yeah.
And
is that the team that Miguel used to play for?
Still does. And then the supporters group was really fighting and saying this didn't happen. Then someone was like, here's video, and then they deleted it and they apologized. Then it comes out when North Carolina FC, the team, tweets out an apology saying, oh, it turns out it was one of our staff members.
Wow.
one of the staff members dumped a beer on a photographer. That is just
as they were traveling outside of work with the supporters to an away match.
Also, it's like there's like 300 people in the stadium. You're not going to get away with that. It's wild.
And also like the players came over to like celebrate like in front of that group where it happened, but like 15 feet over. So it's on, everything's on camera. Like it's hilarious.
Yep. So there we go. That's the weird.
Yeah. The two videos that were released were hilarious. The one where like the other, where the arguing with security and arguing with it. Yeah. You know. I missed lower league.
Yep. The old days. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and do some Minnesota United. The 55-1 podcast. Let's talk about Minnesota United. The big news since 7 years ago when we last recorded is that Robin Lud, beloved player for us, tore his meniscus, which means he's going to miss about 4 to 6 months, which means
he's out for the season.
Yeah, right? maybe we would see him in a playoff run.
I hope they don't metnair him.
Yeah, that's probably what.
Yeah. And so the other news is that Sangbin Jeong joined the team. He's been the newest addition to the squad. And, of course, Emmanuel Reynoso returned to the club. He's now cleared to play. He has not trained with the team yet. I think Wednesday or Thursday, whenever they're back from Tuesday night's Open Cup match, he will be back with the team. He did put out a video that the club put out where he kind of apologized. He did not say much. In fact, he said almost nothing. But
yeah, it was a lot of really good PR speak, though. It was definitely a script that was approved by the lawyers in the PR department.
Yep.
Read to me like it was written by ChatGPT. I thought that the team did a good job to try to make it emotional or meaningful or whatever. This is a kind of a big debate, I think, among fans of how they feel about it. I certainly met a guy the other day, right after it was announced, he came back at Blackheart, and I hadn't met him before. And I asked him, like, so Reynoso's back, what do you think? And he's like, I couldn't care less about why he was gone. I want him back there, and I want him scoring goals. I think there's other people who are like pretty done with the dude.
Yep.
I think Mark. You are Mark.
Yeah, I'm like, why do we want him? Like, we designed our team around him. And this year showed what a huge risk that is when the dude just goes AWOL and doesn't show up. And considering the fact that he's still possibly facing a trial back in Argentina for pistol whipping a teenager, yeah, it might be time to just move on and just see what you can get for him in the summer transfer window.
Yeah. I mean, if you were following this podcast 8 years ago, we would know that we all talked about whatever Reynoso got hit by a bus scenario.
You've talked about him getting hit by a bus to the degree that it's almost creepy.
So, like you're almost wishing for like, it.
No, I mean,
it's starting to get like Final Destination level.
Yeah, it's like it's Mean Girls level. Okay, Mean Girls level. Okay, come on.
But I think there's one school of thought is that he's being brought back. He's going to play a little bit. They'll shop him in the summer, and that's it. Who knows? Maybe he will come back, and really the team will embrace him, etc. There's a whole level of the internal team dynamics and the players amongst themselves that I won't even claim to understand. For me as a fan, there's also this debate where some people will say things like, he doesn't owe us an apology, and I fully subscribe to that. He doesn't owe anyone anything, but I also think that no one owes him anything, right? Me as a fan, like I invest a lot of energy and time doing lots of stupid things like making posters for Bongi. You know, like there are things that we do and we don't owe those to Reynoso. Like, right? Like I don't cheer or do anything for Franco Fragapane. I think he's a racist homophobe. And so I don't owe him anything. And so that's just like the calculus that can come into this. Everyone's going to have their own responses to Reynoso.
Right.
I think I'm pretty, I just don't know what to feel about it. I definitely, you know, he doesn't owe me an apology, but if he wanted to get Westberdine back on his side and be interested in cheering, I would need something that made me have some sort of attachment to him. And in the 17 years he's been here, I've barely seen an interview with him. I don't know jack shit about him. There's no connection between him and the fans other than he's a good soccer player, which is fine. If you just want to do that, that's fine. But then again, when we're talking about how will people embrace you, and that's part of the calculus.
Right. And I think for this PR team is a little bit more engaging with culture than previous ones. So I was impressed to actually see a video.
Yeah, and the video was really, we were there in our Slack, we were talking about there were a couple shots they did that were like pretty masterful. Like, oh, that's good. You know that the content here is nothing. It's a bowl of lukewarm oatmeal, and you filmed it in a really endearing way. So
yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, that's to their credit, and that's fine. But like I'm in a boat that is like, he has to win back that locker room. There is no other way. If he can't win back the locker room, or he loses the locker room, then we have another Cowboy situation, and we just have to figure out what that's going to be.
Yep.
In addition, do you have to look at this, you know, league being as a business, right? They just signed a contract. He needs to play. He's going to play it, regardless of whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
It makes no sense if you're going to shop him not to play him.
You've got
fit.
A completely anemic offense, and he's your best. He's one of the best attackers in the league.
Well, now he has to be in a sense because you use Robin Lud for literally.
Yeah,
the most important stretch in the season.
Yeah. So other bits of news are USOC. We beat Philadelphia Union after we beat Detroit City. Old Dutch comes in, of course, as the penalty kick champion. We are going to be We're recording on a Monday. This will come out Tuesday morning, hopefully, if I do my job right. And so. It's away at Houston, and we just beat Houston. So funny thing about that. And then if we win this, I believe we would go away again to either Chicago or the other team.
Austin, yeah.
Austin, okay. Oh, if we go away to Austin, I might fly down to that. So we also got the MLS salaries released. Oh, the other news is that the Loons are looking for a striker this summer, which just means that it's summertime. That's yeah. all that it means. The flowers
that's
are blooming.
That's how you know.
The flowers are blooming.
It's summertime in Minnesota.
Also, I think, Wes, I don't know if it was Slack or whatever, but you're like, why would anyone trust Adrian Heath to sign another striker?
That is true. Yeah, I should give that mini rant. Thank you for reminding me. we have signed multiple DPs and TAMs. And I made the list of all the pretty big flops, right? You had Ramon Avila. You had Angelo Rodriguez. You had Luis Amaria. You had Luis Amaria part deux. You had Adrian Unu. Am I missing someone in there? Oh, I mean, you had other guys who didn't cost much, so I don't really, like big salary, I don't really count in there.
No. Kai Kamara.
Yeah, I don't, those guys are guys that you would naturally bring in. But we've spent a lot of money.
Mason.
And if you are a team, an owner of a team, why would you say, if the general manager, whatever he is, sporting director, comes to you and says, I need money for another striker, why in God's name would you say yes to that? I just, especially you have Mender Garcia, Song Bin-jeon, and Luis Amaria, and you can't make any of those three work. That is insanity to me. So it's just so funny. I mean, that we'll get one. We'll get another one, and then like, whatever. MLS salaries were released. We don't need to really go in deep on this. I'll you guys let me know if you have any surprises. I think the biggest one for me is that Bongi is making $600,000, which I think he's getting there to earning. But man, like based on last year, as the biggest Bongi fan on the planet, I think that I would have said, "Whoa, that's way overpaying." And now it's his job to earn it, which is great, but that's pretty surprising.
The only thing that stuck out to me is like, well, Emmanuel Reynosa is making $2.1 million.
Yeah,
but he missed the first 4 months of the season, so we saved about $700,000 right there from not paying him for that. So at least we got that money to go somewhere now.
Yep, get savings, get that Emmanuel Reynoso coupon.
That right there is a TAM player that we just saved.
That's right. And then you look
at got DJ. A TAM coupon. TAM look coupon.
Look at DJ Taylor, though. He makes, what, $98,000?
Yeah, that dude needs to get paid.
He needs to get paid, and he needs to get paid now.
Yeah.
Like he's proven that he can play in this league. I think that's it. I think the Miguel Tapias experiment has boded well.
Yep.
So far.
Tapias is making
$500,000,
mm-hmm. which is what you would want to see for a good starting center back. I think that's been great. I mean, Fragapane has that racist homophobe discount. Also, we got a coupon. He only costs $260,000. So good for that. That's great news there.
And you look at Zarek Valentin, who's barely making 85. I mean,
and yet he's springing for bagels. Did you see that video they put out? He's buying the bagels for the team. That dude, like, you signed kind of a fullback, but you basically just signed a stepdad right there. That's thank you for laughing at that. I was pretty proud of that. All right, let's take a break now that I've thrown that out there. And we'll come back and we'll recap the last couple of months. Back on the 55.1 podcast, let's talk about the last couple of months. Basically, I don't know when we recorded last. I think April in 2020 or something. But we're going to look at the last basically month and a half since April 1st. They've played 9 games since then, 9 league games, 2 Open Cup. April 1st was the St. Louis win. They then pulled 1 point from the next 6 league games, and then now they've won their last 2. I'm going to just summarize some things here, and then you guys can jump in. St. Louis, we played a 4-4-2 with Mender and Amaria up top. That became a 4-4-2 with Robin Lud up there against Chicago in the 2-1 loss. And then Sungbin Jeon came into the team, and we went to this 4-2-3-1 again with him playing as a 10. In the last few games, it's just gotten all cocked up. We went to a 5-3-2, and that was a disaster in Kansas City. And, you know, we've gone back to Amaria up top and Sungbin coming off the bench. So where do you want to start? Let me ask this question. What have been the highs of the last 2 months? Like, what's been exciting and the good things?
Probably
Bongi is the answer.
I mean, Bongi the last week, actually.
Well, Bongi,
like, he's got like 4 goals in like the last 3 matches, all in like a calendar week.
He has 5 goals total, I think, right now. Is that my?
Don't remember. Anyways, Bongi's been great.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, team things besides just individual play. I would say how initially, especially in the first 4 matches of the season, and then a little bit in the last couple, is like how our defense has been overperforming, which has been very nice. Like, especially like the last 2 matches, and like, and we kind of spoke about this last time, because I think last time we recorded was after the St. Louis win, and we're like, are we going to keep this up? Are we actually a good team? And we were just overperforming our expected goals against on our defense and our expected goals for on our offense. And then all of a sudden, after St. Louis, our offense dropped off again, and our defense was still doing okay. And then it just kind of things just.
Then we had it was Vancouver 3-2,
and then it was Vancouver and Kansas
mistakes.
City, where we gave up 6 goals in 2 matches, and like that's when like the wheels kind of came off, and like we're like, oh well, maybe we can't. Maybe this whole overperformance from our defense can't be sustained. And then like we had 2-1-0 wins in a row, which probably shouldn't have had. I mean, at least with Houston, they seem to have the better chances. So yeah.
We have our goals against, we've conceded 13. Our expected goals against is 16.23. And then for our offense, we have an expected goals of 16.41. And then we've scored 12 goals. So we are not scoring as much as we should. We're not being clinical. And the other teams, we're keeping them out, or they're not being clinical. Either one. To summarize there. Rodrigo, what's been the overall high for you?
I think the obvious one is Bongi, but for me it has been Miguel Tapias.
Okay.
I think when me and you were able to watch that game together, we cheered at every dirty play he was able to take out of the book. And I think that's given the confidence of like Boxy not having to play up so much, and sometimes seeing Boxy being able to go up and score his goal. I think he scored a goal off of that, doing something like that. And I think that adds another thing, but to have the confidence to be able to have him back there. Sure, is he perfect? No. Right? He's still learning how to play in this league, but overall, it's like having a younger Boxy in the back who's able to be physical and is able to do stuff and get the ball out. And to me, that has helped out our defense. And I mean, whenever the Bossy decides to come into the season, if at all, it should be really interesting what you can do with not only the depth, but also maybe play around with a 3 center back pairing. So
where you have all 3 good center backs doing it. I do maybe want to talk about the 5-3-2, but while we're staying on the highs, I will talk about Bongi. A few things. One is the absolute joy with which he plays and which he celebrates is infectious to the rest of the team, obviously, and to the fans, and that is a breath of fresh air. And I don't take that for granted when you have a player who's just so delightful to watch. I tweeted this in my euphoria the other night as we won in the last second against Portland, that Bongi's my favorite player probably since the Miguel and Christian days, right? And that was because I knew Miguel and Christian, right? And they were there in the small days. We would meet them at away watch party or, things like that, or at US games. Bongi's just a blast. But the thing is, we talked about last year, Bongi is Hey Kool-Aid. He's the Kool-Aid man. He will just run into a brick wall, and then somehow the ball will end up still at his feet. He's still that way, but he wasn't being clinical last year. He missed a lot of chances. And we talked it up to like, okay, he needs to be smoothed out. He needs some time. And then this year, he's still Mr. Kool-Aid. But like, there's a couple things. One is he is being clinical. I'm thinking about there's the one finish he had against Houston. Yeah, where it was good pressing, ball gets to Bongi, and then he runs and he like nutmegs a player and gets past the keeper at the far post. And it's just, that's really good clinical finish. That's not an easy finish there. And then in this Portland game, he was just turning tricks on people. And he was so much fun to watch. And there's just an exuberance to watching him play. He's getting better and better. And that's a blast to watch. We haven't seen something like that here in ages. So it is a super big high. And he has what I think we said 6 goals on the season or something. I think it's 5. That's super. Any other highs we should hit? Other players who are standing out so far? DJ Taylor has had a really good. He's solid on that right, and he's dangerous as well. Hassani Dotson had a really good game against Portland at least, and he's had a couple.
Kamar Lawrence has looked good the last couple of matches.
No, he has not. This is a fight I will have with other people.
Did you see it? He literally like saved a goal.
He
like,
did.
On the right side of the field where he doesn't even play.
That is true. That is true. Why he was over there,
but then
I don't know.
Also he just gave up goals.
I don't think he's adding much in the attack, especially if we want to talk about the 5-3-2. You need someone way faster and more dynamic there. I think he's not been on the right step yet this season. I don't know if it's stuff going on with his mom back home and it's tough for him to, his head's not fully here, which is totally understandable, but I think he's been struggling this season, and I get that. I've had this argument with other people, so.
No, but was it the Houston, there was either a goal, was it the Houston match? It was a Houston match where like he was doing some interplay with Bongi and then like got it and like had like,
yeah,
he's been doing stuff.
He has been doing stuff. I think that he's been defensively more of a liability than DJ, and I think that, yeah. Anyway, that's my part. Sorry. Other highs that I can totally ruin.
I'm cheering for Dotson just to get back into his groove, and I think that's one thing that I'm looking forward to. I also like that DSC is more vocal. And specifically when playing out the back and just looking out directions, I think that's something that I look forward to. And, you know, like, even though Lude has not been the Lude that we know before, he's still, you know, always trying to get the ball. When they get him the ball, just to touch the play back to him, it just opens up so much space that I just wished, you know, there is more of a focal idea of trying to get him the ball so he could just distribute it and then get out there. Because then they forget he's out there and then he moves to the right and then he gets a chance to be able to be dangerous. Yeah. And that's, I mean, until he got injured, you know, that was one of the things that and our forwards, well, yeah, they're all.
Well, that's not a high. Let's do the lows.
Although one thing though is like Sangbin Jeong, like especially maybe when he's out on the wing a little bit more. And once you take the pressure of being the playmaker off of him, where he's not number 10,
no,
take that off of him and just let him run rampant on the side, like on the side of the field. Like he's fast as hell. Like once he gets in that space and kind of just starts running downhill, he's really fun to watch as well. And I've really enjoyed it. I want him to do that a whole lot more.
He wins a lot of headers. Did you notice this at all?
When we
kick the ball up, he will get a header and it will get headed on. And that is like, Luis is not a small guy. And Mender's not a small guy. But to talk about the lows.
I mean, have you seen his calves though? I mean, geez.
Who's? Sangbin Jeong?
Sangbin's. Yeah. I mean, he's got a have a vertical. We should just, that'd be one thing that we should do. Just get the verticals of every single player.
Just get pictures of his calves and just stare at them. I have seen pictures of him with glasses on, and that's doing it for me right now. So let's talk about the lows, and the main thing is the offense. It is dire. We have scored 6 goals from open play, 2 from Mender, 1 from Small Business Journal, and 3 from Bongi. And that is just really bad right now. After 14 games, 13 games, you know, Amarillas only scored from PKs, and credit to Andy Greeter and the other journalists now who are kind of asking, I think, really, really good probing questions of like, okay, can you tell us why this guy's starting? And Heath's answer was, you know, we see what other things that he's doing and we're not ready to move on for him. We think this is good for his confidence. Okay, but why not say that about Mender? Why not give Mender's confidence? Why are we... I think...
Do you remember that guy named Adrian Unu? Like,
yeah.
What about his confidence? You could have played him.
It's just a really bizarre thing where I don't think... I mean, Amarilla has had some pretty decent hookup play in a few games, but he doesn't chase balls down. He doesn't have fight in him. His attempts at goal in the Portland game were comically bad. They were Keystone Cops, and it's hard to watch. And I don't. And it's like, well, maybe John will get a run out in this Houston game and show something. No one's blowing things away right now in the center forward position. But
well, I mean, I think it has to do with like Adrian Heath's pet project syndrome. He had it with Dunlady, brought him back. Didn't pan out, and he's had a thing with Amarilla for a while, and he brought him back. And
I thought the team was ready to move on from him, though.
I think this is Heath's decision in a sense to bring him back to be able to do that, and this is his pet project, so he feels the obligation to give him more playing time in order to figure it out. And I think that's the like, I like Luis Amarilla. I think he's got some interesting footwork that he can do. It's just that I feel that he just overdoes everything too much and doesn't keep it simple. He's just too showy, too flashy without a result that gets there, right? And I think that's my issue with him, is that I don't want him on that aspect of it being up there, but I also want SBJ to come off the bench, because I think that's a better like for like substitution. If you're chasing a game or you have to be able to produce, you're going to be able to stretch the game with him as a coming off the bench than it would be Luis Amarilla coming on the second half.
I think Mender is a great off-the-bench guy, too, because of... I mean, obviously, he created that goal that won us the Portland game, but he has a real physicality. He's maybe not as fast as he thinks or whatever, but he has real power and strength, and... We haven't seen it as much with the goal scoring. He had that really great header from Zarek Valentin in the Vancouver game, the first Vancouver game. I think there might be more there. He did get a little bit of a run out after that, and he didn't show much. Some of it is on the strikers, but a lot of it is we are not creating chances, and we know that, right? We don't have Reynoso. We don't have the old plan, which was right the old Metinier days of putting a cross, and now we've changed up a lot of like who is creating, where are we creating, and I like that we're seeing some experiments happen, but the 5-3-2, for example, that experiment was just a disaster because you had 2 strikers up, but they were on an island. You know, it was like they were just it was the entire team sitting back and then just booting it up to these 2 strikers, and they couldn't do anything. It was a bad bunker situation. It was like the Silo on Apple TV. This podcast brought to you by the Silo, which is a a terrible premise. I don't know why we would watch that show.
No.
What else from the last couple of months has stood out? There was the embarrassing shellacking to Sporting KC, the quickest I've ever seen a watch party empty out at Blackheart.
Well, I mean, just that calendar week, we give up 9 goals in a calendar week. We get 3-2 to Vancouver, 3-3 draw against Philadelphia that went to PKs, and then a 3-0 loss to Sporting Kansas City all in a week. Like, 9 goals in a week is a lot. And it feels like at times, eventually the team is going to play towards the mean, in that if they're overperforming and the defense is overperforming, they're going to have a time where they're going to drastically underperform and everything kind of works its way out to the mean. And that is kind of what that felt like in that stretch. And then also, I don't know. And now with Lude out, I don't know. And Reynosa's not going to be back for weeks still.
Yeah.
And so I have no idea who is going to is Dotson going to be our creator?
I will say
now?
Dotson, I've not been a big Dotson guy. Nothing against him, but he does not put a lot of really great probing. He doesn't put a lot of forward balls in, but in the Portland game, he did. I was about to make a joke about him never passing forward, and then he sent a fantastic ball into the final third, into the box. And I think if he can add more of that, he's not a playmaker, but he can be something more dangerous. DJ can send in pretty decent balls, not just crosses, but he's a good attacking fullback. Yeah, we're desperate because Franco was not particularly good. I don't know what he's doing, what his deal is. He's not been particularly productive in a time when we desperately need him to be.
And the only thing I can think of that would be like, and it won't work, but it would just be like, just go for pure chaos. Just have, you know, Frank Payne be the number 10, but not have him really be a number 10. Have Songbin and then Bongi on the wings, and have Mender up top, and then Dotson can be the sort of steady guy as the number 8 that's kind of doing some passing against the going, but like it just had pure chaos of everyone running everywhere.
Well, the only thing that's working, and the reason why we're winning away and not at home, is that we can play on the counter, and you just kick the ball to Bongi, he chases it, he like runs through the brick wall, And there you go. Bob's your uncle. You've got a goal. So that is a way to play. The problem is it's really hard to play against some teams like that. And it's really hard to play at home like that. And so
it's hard to play against good teams like that.
And we've talked in the past about how this team could be a good counterattacking team. With other players in the past, we've seen like this can work. But the problem is we don't have a way to do a plan A, plan B. We can't play counterattacking soccer on the road and possession at home. And it's just like, we can do both. Even with Reynoso back, we can defend. I guess it's that Reynoso doesn't defend. And so that is a liability.
I just think that overall, like it's been a situation in where like we're good at counterattacking at the moment because we have to be. Because there's no other creativity aspect of the ball. I mean, it'd be wonderful to see what the stats of our losing possession in our own half, which seems to happen quite a bit. I think also in that sense, it's like you look at our possession and games, right? What are we getting? 30%, you know, 60-30. That's usually what it is most of the games, and that determines that you are playing to counter. The problem that we have is that when you have Bongi or you have SPJ going up chasing the ball, there's no one coming up filling those empty spots and open spots. And so there becomes a 2v1 on the corner that gets played back to whatever left back or right back is coming back, and then you kill the momentum of you having to run that overlap, especially if you play it back. I think that's one of the things. I think if they start crossing the ball earlier when we have possession of the ball, I think that creates more chaos instead of waiting to get close to the box. Because that means that our midfielders, like Rosales did in that play, got the ball and then he just let it go because he was open, right? And I think that could be something, but it without having someone who can distribute the ball and remain center in that area, it's just going to become really hard to figure out where any of this offense comes from if it isn't from a counterattack. And that's just the reality of things, is that's just going to be, unless you think somehow Arriaga can distribute ball. He's a good passer, but I just don't know if he can keep up with the idea because he loses the ball too much when he keeps it too long.
Arriaga is just Johnny Grey Goose redux. Has the same...
It's cheaper.
Has the same upsides and downsides. Let's call time on this part and we'll come back and we'll take some questions. Back on the 55.1 podcast, let's talk about some questions here, or answer some questions for that matter. Scott Demerinville says, on the new Aurora kits, it says European fit. Is the sizing different than it was for last year's kits? It's a great question. You should ask Minnesota Aurora about that. We have a merch manager, Jose, who would be happy to answer that. I'm not actually sure. I know that we changed around a bunch of things with factories and stuff.
That reminded me of the famous singer, Jose Jose.
Yeah.
European fit usually means I need to size up one or two.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Connor says, feels like the team has stepped up its communication with the community. Do you feel like it's been a positive? There feels like there's a humanity to heat the season I haven't seen before. Two thoughts, greatest strengths, and et cetera. I think for sure. I think one is just that Apple TV, they have more money and more expectations of the things that they have to produce. You had a really great, 4-minute Bongi short with his parents and stuff, and it should have been a 15-minute Bongi short. It was really good. Or I would say it wasn't really good, but it was getting us there, right? Getting us to actually see these players and understand a bit about them and
develop. Or even the one, too, I mean, because one of the favorite things at the post game is when Michael Boxall and the other players bring their kids out and they, score goals. And they did a short where they were with Michael Boxall and his family at home, where they just showed him playing with his kids. And that's great too. It humanizes him and makes him so it's shows that he's a human and not just a soccer player. He's not just an adult that playing a game that you can yell at. He actually has a soul and whatnot.
They also, I think, have a director of community. I forget the exact position. A woman named Corey. They also have someone like Zarek Valentin, who I forget if we recorded a podcast since then. But there was the Wonderwall. The supporters held a meet and greet at Urban Growler, and Zarek was the one who said, "Hey, can we do this? Can I come meet some fans?" And I mean, what a freaking breath of fresh air. The idea that players would want to connect with the fans who spend all this time making TIFO and doing this stuff. And it's really cool. Zarek is just a really kind dude who's just interested and smart and reminds me a lot of Bobby Warshaw and these guys who were not, they're not the Emmanuel Reynosos. But they just have a real love of the game and they have a lot of passion and they're really smart people to talk to and they're fun. And Zarek also picks up bagels for the team. Ryan Anderson says, summer transfer window needs assessment. What do you think? Which 2 to 3 more positions do you think Heath will target?
Well, forward.
Forward, one. Midfield, and defense, right?
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, Old Dutch and... Dick have the backup covered. We're fine.
We're fine there. Yeah.
I mean, I think that we need another left back. I think that we need a left winger.
I got one.
You have a left back?
I got one. His name is Luis Advíncula. Plays for Boca Juniors at the moment.
Oh, okay. Alexis Gomez is also available. Alexi, sorry.
I think he's in jail, but sure.
Is he really in jail?
Is he really?
I don't know. I think he's not doing great. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I have to double check at that. But that's
there's a big difference between not doing great and in jail.
You read the Peruvian sports news, the ones that I'd read. You know, it's literally like reading Reddit. So
okay. All right. Great. Yeah. Okay. East Coast Dark Cloud says Bongi Posse mount up. Absolutely. They're the ones who created the Bongi has a posse. Big ups to Cal Williams the other day for really nailing smoothly Bogonkule Hlongwane as he was doing the call. I was impressed
because that stood out as like, wow, that is impressive because he was going fast. He was like, just nailed it.
Yeah,
you can tell he's been practicing.
Easy Ha says, please just spend the whole time talking about Bongi. Oh wait, you just did. We did. Even though I had to pull it out of you guys. Eric Voorhees says, is there a cure for what's going on with Amarilla? You guys are doctors. Can you?
Yeah.
Is it lupus?
I mean, it wasn't the hair because he cut his hair and he's still playing terrible. So he's not bringing the Mark McGrath vibes as we would have expected.
And then he cut the Imoria vibes too. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we did this before. He needs someone to give him Olympia. That's it. You know, pass the egg over him and then put it under his bed and just overall, just he's got the mal de ojo. Someone looked at him wrong and then boom. Like, literally, like, he just needs to, he's the cleansing. So, like, you know, that's the thing that I'm saying is like, go ahead. Let someone get it to him, you know, but no one listens. So, there you go.
I'm just going to let that one lay. Matt Legas says, with load out for the season, who comes up from the twos to show their quality? We're going to need bodies. Obviously, Carlos Leatherman needs to come up. Mm-hmm. The twos is a really weird thing. I don't know how many of those players should just be balling out at forward Madison or if they are ready to come up. I mean, can you imagine what the season would have looked like if we could have potentially put Aziel Jackson in? But then again, I think Cam Dunbar is good, and we should see more of him, and we can't see a second of him.
I'm also totally confused by the twos anyways. Like, it feels like the level up, like, there is, like, it feels like they're a level behind. Like, they're, like, USL 1 when we need a USL championship level team, and that's like the player levels we have. Like, there's a weird gap between the ability to move up, and it's, I just don't understand.
Like, obviously, Pacheco, there's the striker, is good, and I'm just wondering, like, okay, how good is he? Like, put him out there. Like, and this is the thing with Cam Dunbar, with all these things. Like, obviously, Franco Fragapane is not doing that much right now. Why not put Cam Dunbar in for 20 minutes and see what he does? We did get to see him in the Detroit game and I think one other, and probably Philly, I forget. But let's see more. Like, let him loose out there and just see, because we've seen that players, you know, maybe we thought DJ Taylor wasn't good enough. And he's shown he can do it. The difference between the levels is not that much. You just need to see if they have the extra percent that can make them drive to be that much better, and you got to give them chances and opportunities to do that. I have no idea is the answer to your question, Matt.
And also with Lude being out now, I think this is Dunbar's time because he seems to see him as a right winger, and so that's where he's going to probably go. So I assume he'll be coming at the bench more now.
It's Dunbar time. Brandon DePillis says team steps up again. Two wins in a row as Ray's return is announced. Did players step up to secure their spots? Why did they lose motivation from the first five games? Did Adrian? I mean, I don't know. Do you guys have an answer to this? I think that was there, other than the Sporting KC game, which was just a shellacking. Is there that much difference between our 0-0 draw against Dallas and our getting a last minute goal against Houston? Sometimes it happens. Let me go back up to our results. You know, when we lost 2-1 Orlando in the last minute, like the Chicago game, we weren't particularly good, but we had a really good second half. I just think that we're an okay team. and you don't, you have some players not performing well.
Yeah. And also it comes down to the fact that, like I said, we're an okay team. We're not good. We're not bad, but the level of being average is that when one player doesn't play well, you're below it. Like, it drops off quickly. And that's been the issue that we've run into, is like the drop off between being an average team that can gut something out and a bad team that's going to get shellacked. If one or two players just drop off and have a bad game, suddenly the whole team is kind of screwed. And that's kind of where we're at right now, just because we don't have we don't have any DPs, literally, like, being honest. Yeah. And we don't have any, like, we just don't have any, like, star power. Like, we're just a meandering middle of the table
team
right now.
There are lots of teams that succeed without star power, just for the record. You know, there are really good teams that can be marshaled there.
But those teams also tend to have, like, an identity based on, like, the coaching and the system and everything else, and we also lack that.
And I think that what Adrian Heath is good at as a coach is putting together a system there that has talented players and lets them succeed, and he gets them all on the same page. I do not think he is someone who can take he's not a Pablo Mastroianni, right, who can take a team without stars and really just make them a cohesive unit that just crushes people and gets results. This year is maybe the first time we've seen lots of grinded out, the St. Louis result. I think the Portland result can be put in there. You know, we're seeing more of that this year. So maybe he's going to prove us wrong. But
I think where they are. They're, you know, at the best right now, top seventh seed, right? You know, and at the worst, we've seen them, you know, 9-10. So
you're going to keep doing that. Oh my
no,
God.
I am. I'm going to milk that.
They're going to finish
sixth. I'm going to milk that, baby.
They're going to finish sixth. And this goes back to your prediction that the absolute highest they could achieve this season at the beginning of the season was seventh. And the absolute lowest, you said, was ninth. Which
Yes.
And you're like, and the other day they were in eighth place, and you're like, see, I'm right.
Yeah.
Which is not
the literally
discussion.
The difference,
I am.
At the end of the season last year, the difference between like seven and nine was like a point.
Yeah, and the discussion was not where will they finish. It is what is in all the possible Doctor Strange universes. And I love that you in no world.
Welcome to the multiverse, baby.
Your multiverse is very, very narrow. All right. Last question. Ryan Maycomb says, how would you incorporate DeBassi into the back four when he returns? And the answer is you don't. I just think that he's your third string center back.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing
maybe
is
he
that
becomes a left back.
There's no rush to like get him back in the lineup, at least. So that's nice. We don't have to Metnar him. So that's kind of fantastic.
I know, but when he comes back, that's the question, right? Like, he's gonna get 30 minutes here, 40 minutes there. So where do you make that? Are we saying that, you know, we take Lawrence out, then we put DeBassi as a left back? Then
I was thinking like, so DeBassi has always been really good with his passing out. Like he's really good at distributing the ball forward. Like I could see him, say we actually got someone on the left wing who's a little bit faster. Like you said, like in the summer transfer window, we got somebody. A 3-5-2 could work where if he's the center of it and he could kind of push forward a little bit more, almost like a reserve, like number six, and
which is
be
why
that
they had,
kind of connector.
Which is why they had Coleman in the center, right? Coleman is actually really good at long passes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Coleman was in the 3-5-2, was that center. But DeBassi, I think, is a step above Coleman in terms of defensive ability.
I just think if we get the DeBassi that we had last year, then I think it plays with the formation and the way that you have. But you have three good defenders out there at the same time. I wouldn't be okay with it. But if you also want to do the Liverpool thing when you put him as a winger or a little bit more tied into the middle, I can see that working as well. It's just where do you need him and where are you comfortable playing him at the moment.
I think that he plays less than 200 minutes this season, just going to be honest, in the league. Maybe he comes back in the Open Cup and we win the Open Cup. But all right, my friends, this has been the podcast. We will see you again in 2027. Hopefully we'll see you at the Blackheart. I miss many of you. Many of you've said very kind things about how much you miss the podcast. But I really enjoy having Monday nights back. And
me too.
Especially since like Emil's doing like 3 soccer days a week, and then
yeah, welcome to the club life.
Yeah, all of a sudden the kids are 8, and it's like every day of the week. I'm old. So good talking, everyone. All right. It's been great. Mark, Rodrigo, all the friends at home, you're beautiful, you're sexy, and everyone loves you.